This podcast is brought to you in part by the estate of Bob Nelson. Bob was a lover of all things San Diego and a longtime supporter of Voice of San Diego and its podcasts. We at Voice of San Diego are honored to have his support during his lifetime and continued support through his estate planning. This podcast is sponsored in part by Intesa Communications Group, a women-owned PR and government relations firm that helps you communicate and advocate with confidence. Intesa colleagues are deeply ingrained in the issues and communities you care about most. From universities and nonprofits to corporate developers, theme parks, and tech titans, Intesa helps thoughtful leaders from all sectors shape San Diego for the better. Learn more at intesacom.com.
If you guys ever voted against me for something, we'd have some beef.
Yeah, would you? Would
for it, sure.
Would you hold? You'd be holding hoops, or you'd tell somebody to hold your hoops.
Yeah, 100%.
Sorry, I still don't know how to deploy that one. Really. Hold my hoops. I get it in context. I'll support you for whatever.
I would vote against Scott, and I think he would expect that.
You would?
You would?
You would support me to chair like some body we were on, wouldn't you?
It depends. Depends
pregnant,
what body.
There what's was known a as a huge... pregnant pause there. Welcome to the Voice of San Diego podcast in partnership with News Radio 600 KOGO. I am Scott Lewis, the CEO and editor-in-chief at Voice of San Diego, and I'm joined as always by managing editor Andrew Keats. What's up? He joins us virtually like it's 2020. Are you okay?
I feel great.
Okay, good. Good to have you. Fellow managing editor Andrea Lopez Villafana. What's up, Lopez?
What's up, Lewis?
Coming up on the show this week, more uncertainty at the Metropolitan Transit System. The transit agency tried to elect a permanent board chair this week after Nathan Fletcher's demise, but it failed. We'll explain what's going on at MTS. Plus, San Diego City Council member Kent Lee asked a lot of questions as the new homeless camping ordinance, the prohibition on homeless camping at least, made its way through the Land Use and Housing Committee at the City Council. Was it too many questions for the mayor? And we'll call up senior investigative reporter Will Hunsberry. He's going to lay out his latest story of three North County nonprofit executives and how they spun a web of deals they happen to make some money off of. That's all coming up. Stay with us.
But first, we're hosting our next live podcast on May 10th. We'll be at Whistle Stop Bar in North Park with other Voice journalists and two special guests. Voice members get in for free. Non-members are $15. See the details and register at vosd.org/events. We'll see you there.
Get a membership, right, people?
Yeah, just do it. I mean, you get all the perks.
We need it. We need you. We're excited to go back to Whistle Stop. It's been way too long. It's always a fun time there. We get a little crammed in. Should be nice weather and in this beautiful April springtime sun that we experience. We'll have some, I guess it'll be May then, so we won't have May gray. We'll have May sunshine. That's what happens in May. Also, you can watch the video from this podcast actually now on YouTube and our website. We'll be posting segments of the show regularly, and you can check them out and subscribe at Voice San Diego's YouTube page. That's YouTube. And Voice San Diego. All right, let's get to the news. You have an update from a story we've been following for a few months now from National City.
Yeah. So I don't know. I don't think this has ever made it into a San Diego special. I don't know if this is like a National City special. But it was for a long time. I think it falls under that category.
Yeah, I think you're right. San Diego special has been resolved this time from South Bay.
I do think that we're talking about something specifically about the city of San Diego's dysfunction. Unique.
Really? I thought it was more of like a San Diego in general. Like I would put the Chula Vista Bayfront as like a long-going like San Diego special.
Their university efforts.
Yeah, like that's a San Diego special.
Yeah, yeah, okay, you're right. I can see
that. I don't think it has to be limited to city limits, which are bizarre anyway.
Well, they are, but well, the boundary is bizarre and meaningless.
Definitely. Okay, so longstanding issue has been resolved. Cruising in National City is no longer a crime. The city council officially voted to repeal the ban on Tuesday, reversing its 1992 law.
What was the ban, though?
The ban was on cruising. So it's not a ban on lowriders, but it happens to be an action that lowriders do, right? You cruise along the street. It came about in 1992 because people were concerned that like these really big cruising events were causing public safety concerns in National City.
How did they define cruising? Let's get this specific.
Yeah, just like a slow, it's like going through a block 3 to 4 times on that same block. So cruising, you know, you're driving slow, you're riding through that same block, circling maybe. It's just that back and forth action multiple times.
Mm-hmm. And it came from what?
It came in 1982, business owners, police officers were mostly pushing it because the cruising in National City brought a lot of people from different cities and it was like a big event. And, you know, it was causing issues for police where you had maybe some, you know, illegal activity, lots of fights. So police really pushed for it, as well as business owners at the time who, you know, would have trouble getting their customers in the door because there were so many people.
And it had a sort of racial component as well.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. So now it's lifted. It's been a long time. I wrote about it in October, kind of looking at why National City couldn't lift it. And this was around a time where a lot of cities were lifting their ordinances, looking at them like, wow, this ban is, you know, pretty racist and we need to get rid of it. And National City, one way or another, just could not get rid of it. And what my story explored was that they kept tying the conversation of lifting its ban, just removing the ban, to large events because they were concerned, again, you know, traffic congestion, what it would mean for the business owners. And, you know, when we had our last live podcast, we had former mayor Alejandra Sotelo Solis and then Councilman Ron Morrison speak on the ordinance, which they had not been able to lift. And both of them were still kind of tied to like, yeah, we need to lift it, but, you know, we need to make sure that it happens the right way because we don't want to have these issues with big events.
Yeah. And now Ron Morrison, so he's mayor and he had this quote that we both seized on. He basically doesn't think it's that hard anymore.
Yeah. He said, he said this, the Union Tribune reported that the vote that happened to lift the ban is more of a symbolic. It's more symbolic in our city more than anything else because the city hadn't actually enforced the anti-cruising law in years. But I just thought it was funny given that, you know, it's symbolic, but it took them a really long time to get rid of it.
It was symbolic, which means it doesn't have any impact, but it was impossible for them to change because of the worry they had about how much impact it would have, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So I guess that National City special, San Diego special.
Well, the symbolism, like people sometimes say, like, this is just symbolic, but symbolism matters.
Yeah.
Right? Like, that was a big symbol that they had for a long time. Like, that culture was not welcome.
Mm hmm. Mm-hmm. He goes on to say in that Union Tribune story, times have changed a lot. I think the image of lowriders has changed. They got stigmatized with a lot of things they didn't do anything, they didn't have anything to do with. It was people who are on the sidelines, and it's taken a while for people to realize that these people that love these cars, the last thing they want is trouble around their cars. Which is funny because Ron Morrison was one of the residents of National City who spoke in favor of the ban in 1992. Things change.
Yeah, they do. Okay, another quick update on a discussion we had last week. This was about the 6 blocks around the current City Hall in downtown San Diego that the city now controls, including 101 Ash Street and the Civic Center Plaza Tower. The city now owns and controls those buildings, and we've talked a lot about how they want to redevelop all that area. And then there was this whole like push from these architects and visionaries who were like, this is a once-in-a-century opportunity for us to really shape the future of such an important area of San Diego. We shouldn't waste it. We should do something special, architecturally significant, honor city employees. And last week we talked about how this was going, though, to the San Diego City Council's Land Use and Housing Committee, and it looked like they were telling folks like that, we're working on something cool like that. But in reality, they were putting forward a plan to just, as their words are, dispose of 5 of the 6 blocks of the land through the Surplus Lands Act sort of structure in this state, which says you have to prioritize affordable housing on it, and you're just going to have to see what developers propose for those buildings, for those mm-hmm. lots.
But you could have different developers.
Yeah, usually they'd be like a partnership, but you'd mm-hmm. pick one of the partnerships, and then they could add other partners mm-hmm. along the way. But the affordable housing has to be the leader. The affordable housing developer has to be the leader of the partnership. Mm-hmm. Now, so for the 6th block, they would do a new city hall. Mm-hmm. That's at the city operations building, which has that fire station and such along Front Street, across the street from the current city hall. Mm-hmm. Now, that would be a project run by the city for public good and for the public use. The rest of the land would be, again, quote, disposed. Now, they had the hearing after our podcast was recorded, and sure enough, I think the things we talked about were reinforced in that meeting. They said, we are just going to put this out. We are putting absolutely no restrictions mm-hmm. on what the developers can propose or need to do on that land. None. They said, unlike the sports arena deal where we said you got to build a new arena and such, this one, there's none. And that included the Civic Theater. So the one thing that's like that would be remaining on that area that is of a public interest mm-hmm. would be the Civic Theater. And they're saying, we're not even going to ask the new developers to build a new one or to revitalize or even to like, we're just going to say, like, we hope you preserve it. Then there's a lot of people from the theater world, even the union that does the stagehands and such. And they asked, well, this is just, you're not doing anything for this here. This is really upsetting. And it seems, in fact, like there was one person from the stagehands union said, it's alarmingly vague what you've put in this recommendation about just hoping that it stays there. Mm-hmm. So Councilman Joe LaCava ended up responding and asking the city staff, like, hey, can we put anything more strict in there? And this was classic. They said, well, you'd have to go through the Surplus Lands Act and ask the California State Housing and Community Development Department if it's okay. Mm-hmm. Because remember, our whole thing is, remember, they prioritize affordable housing above all else, right, except that they can consider something else requiring it. And we don't know if requiring a theater is going to screw the whole thing up. Even though they literally just went...
Just did that in Sports Arena.
They literally just did it at Sports Arena. And then Jay Goldstone, who is the mayor's special assistant for these matters, said, I don't think the state is going to have a problem with that. And then he dropped this line, which I think was probably the most newsworthy line there. But then who is going to pay for it? So he's basically like, nobody wants to pay for a new civic theater.
Yeah.
And you should keep that in mind when you say you want to preserve or revitalize or rebuild a new one, because it's not going to happen. That seemed kind of big.
Yeah, it's a bummer. I mean, so one way to do it is to allow people to build a lot of housing and then ask them from the amount of money they're going to make on that housing to pay for things like a civic theater.
It sounds much
in the same way they did in the sports arena, which it was, you know, supposed to, they didn't give them a cash subsidy. You were supposed to subsidize the public structure through all the profit you were going to gain from the rest of the development. I don't see why that wouldn't be an option.
Well, here, because they want all of that, it sounds like, for the new city hall.
Right. So they're just prioritizing that.
And then the other thing they talked about is that they've gotten clearance from the airport authority to build towers there as high as 450 feet. So that's not short.
Mm-mm.
So it sounds like, even though the architects and designers are talking a lot about all the things that could happen on that land, that really it's probably going to be 4 or 5 towers of housing. and a new city hall across the street. And maybe that's just what we should be excited about.
I don't know.
Yes, we've got that to look forward to.
We literally are going to look forward to it. We're going to stare at it because we're right next to the whole space.
If we hang out in this spot, yep.
Luckily, so, if my 2-year-old becomes a city planner, maybe when in his second or third job in his mid-30s, he'll be able to work in the new city hall.
Well, anyway, that is going forward. This full city council at the end of the month, I think next week, will decide whether to actually go ahead and do that. It's a notice of availability that the development world will see, and they can put a bid up, and they have 60 days to put their bids in, and the city can work with one of them or not, and we'll see how that comes out. In that same committee, there was a really interesting discussion, very long one, about the proposed ordinance that is going forward, championed by Mayor Todd Gloria and City Councilman Stephen Whitburn. Mm-hmm. The idea is to prohibit camping, homeless encampments, anywhere in the city within 2 blocks of certain schools, K-12 schools, certain parks.
Shelters.
Shelters, trolleys, or other transit stations, mm-hmm. And a few other things like that. Basically, most of the city is covered by that. Mm. Now, that would be all the time. And then the rest of the city, you would be not allowed to camp anywhere in those other parts of the city if there was shelter available. Mm-hmm. Now, let's start with this. This was Councilman Stephen Whitburn. He was talking about why this was needed, and he made a bunch of points about how bad the encampments are. They start fires. They spread disease. There's a lot of discomfort among people in the community, kids walking to school, and people worried about the whole situation. And he said this.
But building housing takes time. This council is working to make that process more efficient, but it still takes time. In the meantime, the city is adding shelter beds at an unprecedented pace. Hundreds of shelter beds over the past 2 years.
So they went through this list. Now, his staff ended up presenting a whole list of some of the things the city has done. You've heard the mayor talk about this almost 70% increase in shelter beds. They talked about the old library being transitioned into a shelter. They talked about the open, safe sleeping places that they were considering. They talked about all kinds of different options. But do you know what else they listed as things that were happening that was going to assist this need for shelter? Mm-mm. And they mentioned the new development of the Civic Core, all the 6 blocks we just talked about, and how that's part of the innovative solutions they're bringing to this. So we're seeing deja vu. The same conversation that happened with the sports arena, that as sports arena development going to provide some assistance for the homelessness. Now this is now the new one that they're listing.
I have to hope that at least in like a tertiary motivation was that somebody knew that it would drive us crazy, that if they included that in the list, they like.
I'll take that. If that's true and somebody just like winks at me in the next few days, like I'm good. I get it. Like good job.
Oof.
But it,
they will be so annoyed.
Now, I want to say
they will
be
triggered.
They obviously have added shelter capacity in these different areas. They obviously are pursuing different things. Uh-huh. But
the shelter line is like straight up. If you like chart the amount of shelter, there's no question that they're adding a lot. And
I think they talked about safe parking lots too.
Yes, they did.
Uh-huh. And absolutely, like we've talked about a million times, that like there's no separation between the homelessness crisis and the housing, than the cost of housing. And you got to build a lot more housing to combat the cost of housing. But the project, the Civic Core project, will not house a person for like 20 years.
I mean, best case, it's like
10,
but 6 like, to 10, right? Yeah, like
yeah.
Best case.
Yeah, it's
so just even listening it there is just wildly humorous to me. So that's fine, whatever. though, when it got to council comments, Kent Lee obviously brought his sharpest pencil. So he's the city council member recently elected from District 6. Here was his first question that seemed to stump city staff.
Just to get a sense, how much total shelter capacity is available in the city of San Diego today?
Thank you, council member. I am going to refer to the mayor's staff, Jessica Lawrence, and the mayor's staff for an answer to that question.
Sure. We have Chief Operating Officer Eric Dargan here to speak to shelter capacity and the mayor's commitment to opening additional beds.
Sir, I don't have the number for the capacity available today.
They ended up pulling it out a minute or so later, but that's where it starts kind of going downhill for Kent Lee and the mayor's office partnership here. So Kent Lee goes on and asks about enforcement. So he's kind of making this whole point. He's like, how will people know if
there was he as pointed and vicious in his second question as he was with that first
one? That vicious first question, yes.
Absolutely snarling and rabid.
Yes, he was snarling about this next question as well, where he asked them, I thought it was a really interesting train of thought. He's like, look, so you're saying some of these areas people can be if there's no shelter space available, but how will they know if there's no shelter space available? Or if there is there going to be like a billboard or an app or something that tells them?
Like one of those indicators at a Brazilian steakhouse, the like the red and the green that you like flip upside down, like depending on if you want the meat.
Well, it was because he asked like, well, how do we know like what our shelter capacity is? And I believe it was a police chief who explained that, you know, they get a certain number at the beginning, you know, of their shifts, whatever, and then they have that number, and then say the officers interact with a homeless individual and they say, okay, well, we have these numbers. So first we have to call, make sure those beds are still available, and then they call and confirm, and then that person could be placed into a shelter. But his question was like, well, how do those individuals know that?
Yeah, how do they know where they can be?
Yeah.
If it's not allowed or whatever. And I think he got to the real point. And a lot of our theme, Andy in particular, has been making this recently, is like a lot of the point recently is just say it. Just go where you're, where we're really talking about here. And I think we finally had that moment here. So here's Kent Lee going a little bit further, again, with his just absolutely savage line of questioning.
And so I'm wondering if by nature this would actually deter encampments in any public space simply because no one will know if there's any space available at any given moment.
I can help speak to that. So it's important to note that the existing municipal code bans encampments in all public spaces. What this ordinance will do is help provide clear rules of the road, help provide clarity on where people can and cannot be. So the hope is additionally through additional signage, through education and training, that there will be a deterrent in certain sensitive areas as written.
Okay, two really interesting things she said there. One is city law already bans encampments throughout the city. Yeah. So, okay, just take that in for a sec. Like, this law doesn't ban encampments throughout the city. City law already bans encampments throughout the city. So they turned to a city attorney right there and just said, am I right? And she's like, yeah.
So we're all like, huh?
So there's that. And then the second thing she says is, yes, what this does is kind of clarify things so that we can deter, so that we can communicate to the entire city that camping is not allowed more clearly. And they can say, basically, they have these legal precedents where they're saying, like, we can do it as long as other places are open, and we just specify where we're saying you can't be if there are no shelters available. And so I think that gets to the core of what we're talking about here, which is like they want to pass a law so that they can say clearly to homeless San Diegans that they are not welcome to camp. Which brings into what we talked about last week, which is there was a lot of commenters through this program, through this agenda item, saying like, you're going to tell everybody they can't be in San Diego. You're going to push them out of San Diego.
Mm-hmm.
That's what they want to do.
Mm-hmm.
Just, it's fine. It's just like everybody would benefit if everybody just kind of came out and recognized that that's what they want to do.
Yeah. There's a lot of people who don't like that.
Mm-hmm.
But the intent of the measure is that. That's exactly like that's what they've just that's what they're trying to do. That, I mean, it took them quite a while, you know. And I thought Kenley asked really good questions, and I wish it was more commonplace on the city council that people asked questions like this in open meeting to get us to this point. But they ended up saying after his questioning what they wouldn't say in their own initial staff report putting this together, which is what we want to do is deter people from camping in San Diego.
This doesn't necessarily do anything new to city law, except makes it a little easier for us to tell them and to communicate broadly that they are not welcome to camp anywhere. Mm-hmm. And I thought that was really interesting, and it's making me, it made me sort of realize what's going on here, which is, the mayor has decided, I think rather obviously, that the main thing they want to do here is not to add shelter and then express where you can't be, or add places where you can be and then make sure those other places are cleaned up.
Mm-hmm.
That's been the framework of so many ideas for now, like 2 years, right? Like, is let's create as much shelter as possible and then be like far less tolerant of encampments elsewhere. Mm-hmm. What he's kind of going at is like, I have provided enough shelter. Mm-hmm. We're going to do some few other things, including rebuild the city hall area. But I want to move on from that and just make it clear that like you're not allowed to camp anywhere else. Mm-hmm. And I think that was driven home by his own appearance before the press a few hours or day later, where he said, this is Mayor Todd Gloria, he said this, and it was kind of a frustration with the reporters in the room, where they're like, well, you know, what about places where people can go, or shelters, or adding shelter capacity? He said that,
I will not house the homeless population for every other city in the county of San Diego. And a part of this enforcement ordinance is about making sure that we're taking care of our people, because we're compassionate folks. But I'm not going to be mopping up the messes in other people's cities.
I think,
can feel that big city energy coming from that one, huh?
Yeah. I think that...
Hey, Lemon Grove, get your own shelters.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's what...
In New York City, that's really what you hear a lot of, though, is like, we're not handling this for Huntington, New York. Long Island has their own problems, you know, like,
yeah,
that's really the real big city energy, is when you're deeply frustrated that you're expected to be the one with the resources to solve problems.
I think that's the frustration is the point in this discussion. I think it's we talked about symbolic votes earlier, like, mm-hmm. This is a very clearly a symbolic effort to make it clear that we've changed direction, and that the mayor himself has embraced the sort of, there's always been two reactions to the homeless problem in San Diego. This sort of two big tranches, right? One is this more liberal left side that says like, hey, you know, we have to have compassion. We have to see what, we have to provide options. We have to provide public housing. We have to do all kinds of things to take care of people. And then on the other side, there's been this rather reactionary view of like, these people, they choose this lifestyle, they move here, we're coddling too much, and we need to shut it all off and make it clear that they're not welcome here.
Right. They're here because we've made it so comfortable for
right.
them to be here.
And I think the mayor started on this side, on the more liberal left side, mm-hmm. and the compassion side, and even ran on that. And I think he's fully...
It was like a pretty... The difference between those two was like a pretty distinct vector in the mayor's race
right.
in 2020 about between him and his opponent.
Yeah.
About which side the two candidates landed on.
and he's clearly gone to the other side. Now, that's, again, another thing that everybody would benefit from just like seeing clearly. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's just a very interesting development, but it sort of belies the idea that what we're bringing to this discussion is vast amounts of shelter and then an ordinance that says where you can't be. This is you can't be. And I think it's belied or it's made clear by the reactions. What was Mayor Kevin Faulkner's first reaction to this? He said, you need to put more shelters. Yeah. The city council said, we're not going to pass this forward unless you put more shelters in place first. Every single major interest group that even was positive about this said, you need to put shelters first. Mm-hmm. And so it's very interesting that he wanted to go forward with it, knowing that he wasn't there. I think... Again, we're getting to this point in the mayor's sort of reign where he's saying, I've done enough for shelters. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of people, even on the right, who are saying, no, you haven't. Mm-hmm. And how that gets resolved and the tension and whether that makes it through the city council without being resolved is going to be really interesting for me to watch.
The history of city council, it would be an uncommon step for them to choose not to pass this. That would be a rejection of the mayor's agenda that you don't often see the city council.
Yeah.
But Kent Lee voted against it.
He did.
And that got him kicked out of a certain press conference.
Yes, that's right. So there's a coda to this, which is that he voted no. And after these tough questions and after that vote, he was supposed to appear the next day with the mayor at a press conference about the budget. And they said, yeah, we don't need to do that anymore. Which brings up yet another, I think, point, which is like, is challenging the mayor seen as the sort of harsh political or risky political decision that it might have been seen as before? Or is he kind of excited about that? So that's how this ordinance goes forward or not is something we're going to be following very closely. Obviously, we've talked at length about this emergency posture that the city needs to have to deal with this crisis. And that is that two part of like making clear where things need to be cleaned up, but also making clear where people can go. And they keep bringing up where the safe sleeping sites that they're going to bring online are and that they're working really hard on that. But we haven't seen any progress on that discussion either. So stay tuned. Now, we talked about Stephen Wibbern a couple weeks ago. We talked about how this was an amazing moment for him in his political career, how everything's set up for him to show tremendous leadership to get MTS all settled and to shepherd this homeless ordinance through and to get a new chief of staff. He's a busy guy, and he just got a vicious rebuke by his very colleagues on the city council. Andy, explain what happened.
Well, so he was the vice chair when Nathan Fletcher stepped aside
of MTS.
Yes. And as vice chair, when Fletcher stepped aside, he became acting chair. But by board rules, the board has to appoint and vote on a new chair. That happened this morning. And the executive committee last week had put three names forward as nominations for their new chair. One was Steve Goebel in El Cajon. The other was Patricia Dillard in La Mesa, and the other was Stephen Wibbern.
Goebel is a Republican, right?
He's a Republican, yes. So the first things first, none of the three of them got won the nomination. None of them got enough votes to win. That's twice. They put them all up for a vote. They were all voted down. And then they did three floor nominations of each of them. And again, then none of them got enough votes. And so the end result of it all was that Stephen Wibbern continues to be acting chair until next month when they can try to vote again.
Wibbern failed to get the votes. And it wasn't like some strangers who voted on him.
No. So Sean Elo Rivera, the council president, and Monica Montgomery Stepp, San Diego councilwoman, both voted against him. And Vivian Moreno, who's on the board because she is Todd Gloria's alternate. Todd Gloria is a board member, but he doesn't really ever go. So Vivian Moreno was there, and she voted for Patricia Dillard and against Sean as well, or excuse me, against Stephen Whitburn as well. So the three city council members, or, you know, Stephen Whitburn's colleagues, supported Patricia Dillard from La Mesa and not Stephen Whitburn, which, yeah, that's a, you know, I mean, like, a lot of times these things break down not necessarily as like party alliances, but just like regional alliances, or I'm not going to vote against my colleague, that sort of thing. This sort of like convivial, insider politics. But boy, that didn't happen here with his three colleagues voting against him.
Yeah, it's a little awkward.
Yeah, the first checkpoint. If we start the timeline of this is Stephen Whitburn's big opportunity to show leadership in the region.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
and it starts the moment Nathan Fletcher falls down.
Yeah,
then this is probably the first checkpoint. Okay,
yeah.
Good. We're excited about the leadership you're showing at MTS. Continue or not? And he got a big thumbs down from three of his direct colleagues.
Mm-hmm.
Yes,
who wanted a woman that, I'm sorry, I've never heard of, Patricia Dillard. Who is she?
Yeah. She was elected in La Mesa in November. So, and then she was appointed to MTS in January. She's been on the board for a few months.
Okay. So they wanted her above mm-hmm. this man that they had served with in this capacity, who was acting chair already and who they've served with for a couple of years now.
That's correct. Yeah.
Okay. Just making sure. Understood.
Yes. So in a month, you know, they're not just going to continue to not sort this out. They're going to game this out, and somebody will presumably be voted into the position next week. And maybe that'll be Stephen Whitburn. But even if that comes through and that happens, like this was, as you say, still a rebuke nonetheless, and unavoidably.
The MTS saga continues. We haven't spoken about the ongoing questions and mysteries about the allocations against Nathan Fletcher.
You know, the easiest way to see this resolve right here would be for Todd Gloria, who is, again, he is on the board.
He could just
Moreno is an alternate on the board.
Yeah.
If he just goes.
Oh, because he supports Steve Whitburn.
Yeah.
So he could go and actually show up and make the vote himself.
And then it's over.
And then it would be enough?
Well, because Vivian Moreno voted against him and she would be gone.
Right. So yeah, it changes the whole dynamic.
Yeah.
Is it a far? Where is MTS located? Is it too far? Well, for now, Stephen Whitburn remains acting chair for another month. We're going to take a quick break. Stay with us.
This podcast is sponsored in part by Intesa Communications Group, a women-owned PR and government relations firm that helps you communicate and advocate with confidence. Intesa colleagues are deeply ingrained in the issues and communities you care about most. From universities and nonprofits to corporate developers, theme parks, and tech titans, Intesa helps thoughtful leaders from all sectors shape San Diego for the better. Learn more at intesacom.com.
The San Diego Housing Federation's annual Ruby Awards is the county's largest affordable housing community recognition event. They'll honor the best people, projects, and achievements from the past year. Join the awards on June 6th at the Marriott Marquis San Diego Marina. Early bird pricing is available until April 12th. Secure your tickets today at housingsandiego.org. That's housingsandiego.org.
Well, for the last few months, our senior investigative reporter, Will Huntsbury, has pored through tax returns, financial agreements, and other documents to reveal how three men connected with two senior care nonprofits found ways to make money off of several of the transactions those nonprofits made. And to explain what he found and why it matters, Will joins us now. Hey, Will.
What's up, Scott?
So tell us from the beginning, what did you find?
Well,
I was looking into two nonprofits in North County, and basically each nonprofit runs a senior center. One is in Vista, one is in Escondido. It basically, the nonprofit kind of owns, operates the senior center. And I found these three men were connected to those nonprofits in various ways. One man's name's Matthew Parks, and he was the founder of both nonprofits. And then there was Tom Sutton and Scott Kirby, and they helped guarantee the loan for one of the buildings that the nonprofit bought. And they're also the business partners of Matt Parks. And so basically, you know, I was looking into this because we're talking about nonprofits, right? And nonprofits strike this deal with the government that, you know, they are going to serve some mission for the public good. And in exchange for that, they're going to get tax benefits. Well, you know, it became evident to me pretty early on that these guys were making quite a bit of money through these nonprofits, which is not what we expect to see happen with nonprofits, right? We don't expect to see them there with people making a lot of money through them necessarily.
Yeah, you can make money in nonprofits as a salary, right? And, you know, there's totally. Actually nonprofit, like hospital executives make a lot of money, that sort of thing. But what is the senior care facility? What is the senior center? What is this a place where seniors can go and hang out, or where they're actually living?
Where they're actually living. Maybe senior center is not the best way to put it. Yeah.
Okay. And so then, you mentioned that they bought a building, they got a loan for it. And in what way are they making money that stood out?
There's several different things. There were a couple of different real estate deals that allowed them and their friends to make several hundred thousand dollars. There were commissions, one for $150,000 to Matt Parks that we're not sure what it's for. There were acquisition fees upward of $500,000. There are guarantor fees on the loan that are upwards of $100,000 per person, per building, per year. We're talking about straight payments to board members of $50,000. And we're also talking about contracts between the nonprofit and a company that these guys have all owned together, a company called Bayshire. And we don't know how much those contracts are worth, but we know they exist. So like you say, people make money from nonprofits all the time through their salary, and sometimes it's a lot of money. But, you know, I encountered multiple deals well into the six figures where these people are making money through their nonprofit.
I think there was one deal specifically that, you know, stood out to me was the single family home tied to the real estate deal that they had.
Right. That's an interesting one, you know, and these deals, some of them are like pretty complex, you know, and I ran into that writing it. It was like, how do you keep this interesting and easy for people to understand while also explaining these deals in all their complicated nature? And the one you brought up, Andrea, is a good one. That was at the Senior Center in Vista. Matt Park's nonprofit, it purchased a senior center for $3.9 million. But that senior center was being sold as a package deal with a nearby house. And so Parks put the senior center in the nonprofit's name, but he and Scott Kirby purchased the house. And they got a really great deal on it because it was this package deal. They paid $200,000 for it. Kirby eventually transferred his portion to Parks. Parks soon after flipped the house for $435,000. So Parks made $235,000 on that transaction because he was able to buy a house for $200,000 while his nonprofit was making a much bigger purchase.
That was similar to a story you've done before about this same sort of complex partnership. But this story takes another step and found some other agreements as well, some other transactions. You mentioned some broker fees as well. How did they figure in?
Yeah. There's multiple different fees. One was an acquisition fee for $540,000. So Parks and Tom Sutton, in this case, they own a company called Torrey Pines Development Group. And when one of the nonprofits purchased a senior center, Torrey Pines acted as the acquisition broker, which typically means that they're connecting a buyer to some type of financing. And so they received $540,000 in acquisition fees as part of that transaction when the nonprofit scooped up this senior living center.
So they got a fee for facilitating a deal that they were the ones doing.
That's exactly right. I should say, I mean, they have a lot of reasons why they say all these things are okay. You know, the house deal that we just talked about, you know, they say for several reasons, the nonprofit would have taken a loss on that deal, even though Parks flipped the house and made a profit himself. You know, they say they couldn't have secured the same financing they did. And they say they would have had to pay tax on it because it was unrelated income to their nonprofit. They would have had property taxes. They would have had these other liabilities that would have made it sunken costs. When it comes to the acquisition fee, they say it was a market rate fee. They say they had an attorney write them a letter saying that that was okay to do. And at one point they were talking about providing that to me, but never have. So they've clearly thought all these things through a lot. And I'm not weighing in on the legality of what's happened here. But, you know, I think the story really interested us because, again, you know, you don't typically see a nonprofit where the people who run the nonprofit are also making money through quite a few different deals connected to that nonprofit.
Well, it is an important story and a fascinating one. You can check out and all of actually Will's work at his own URL, vosd.org/Will. Thanks, Will.
Thanks so much.
Thanks for listening to the Voice of San Diego podcast, the most popular public affairs podcast recorded in San Diego that's also having a live show May 10th at Whistle Stop. Do not forget about that. VOSD.org/events. We are the most popular public affairs podcast that is doing a live event May 10th at Whistle Stop. Really just the best podcast in that particular category of podcasts. We will have two special guests who we, of course, know and have booked. Clearly, no question about it. You don't need to worry about whether we've done that because they are booked. Maybe. Voice members get in free and you can register now at vosd.org/events. We'll see you there. That's vosd.org/events. I'm Scott Lewis, CEO and Editor-in-Chief at Voice San Diego. Andrew Keats is Managing Editor. Andrea Lopez Villafaña is also Managing Editor. Nate John is our producer. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you next week.